Hello and welcome to Things Unseen, the podcast for people of faith and those who have an interest in the spiritual side of life. I'm Liz Adekunle. I'm a Church of England priest, former Archdeacon of Hackney and chaplain to His Majesty the King. In this Good Friday and Easter edition of Things Unseen, I'll be looking at the role of Pontius Pilate in the story of Christ's death. Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor, is often seen as the villain of the peace. After all, it was he who sent Jesus to be crucified. Christians all over the world remember him whenever they recite the Creed, which reminds us that Jesus suffered under Pontius Pilate. But look at the story more closely, and it throws up a lot of questions. Pilate knew that Jesus was innocent, and he actually seemed quite reluctant to send him to the cross. So why did he do it? Was he a weak man rather than an evil one? A man who put political expediency before the voice of his own conscience? Or one who just couldn't be bothered to stand up to the crowd baying for Jesus' blood? And if that's so, how does his story challenge all of us who have any kind of power over others, as teachers, employers, line managers, parents, or any other way? With me to explore these questions are Chibundu Onozu, Christian author and musician. Hello, Chibundu.
Hello.
And the Reverend George Pitcher, familiar with the corridors of power from his time as a journalist, founder of his own PR company, who spent time doing public affairs at Lambeth Palace when Rowan Williams was Archbishop of Canterbury. Hi, George.
Hi, Liz. Thanks for having me.
We'll also be hearing from someone who can relate his own life story to Pilate's. But first, George, just remind us what the story of Pilate is all about.
Well, thanks, Liz. The Pilate story is like this. After Jesus has had his last supper with his friends and gone at dead of night to the Garden of Gethsemane, he's arrested, he's betrayed in that garden, and they shackle him and take him first to the high priest Caiaphas, where he's questioned and slapped around a bit. And then in the early morning, they take him to the local Roman governor, Pontius Pilate. Now, Pilate will be very fed up at this stage of being bothered early in the morning. It may even be dawn, you know, small hours of the morning. And he asks, "What charges have you got against this man?" And they go, that is the people that have brought him there, they go, "He's a criminal, obviously." And Pilate says, "Then judge him by your own law." And they say, "But we have no right to execute him." So Pilate takes Jesus into his palace on his own. And this is a very dramatic moment because here's this rather scruffy, beaten-up preacher from Galilee in the marbled halls of the palace of the procurator of Judea, the local Roman governor. And Pilate says, "Are you king of the Jews?" Because that's what they've been calling him. And Jesus says, "Well, that's your name for me, or did somebody else tell you that?" And Pilate says, "What have you done?" And Jesus replies rather enigmatically, "My kingdom is not of this world." And Pilate jumps on this and says, "You're a king then," because that would be sedition, taking over from Caesar, if you like. And Jesus replies, "Well, so you say, I testify to the truth. Everyone on the side of the truth listens to me." And Pilate goes, "Ha, what is truth?" And he goes out and he faces the crowd again, Pontius Pilate, and he says, "I can't find a charge for this man. Now, your Passover custom is to release a prisoner at Passover. Will you release this one?" And they shout, no, release Barabbas." Barabbas has led an uprising and is a local criminal. So Pilate has Jesus flogged, and a crown of thorns is put on his head, and he's dressed in a purple robe like a king, and they tease him and mock him by going, "Hail, King of the Jews." And Pilate goes to the crowd again and says, "Look, I find no charge against this man. Here is the man," he says, after he's been beaten up, a very famous phrase in history, "Ecce homo," there's bloodied and beaten, a pathetic figure of Jesus. And they shout, "Crucify him." And Pilate says, "Well, take him and do it yourselves." And the leaders say, "We have no law for that. He claimed to be Son of God, so he must die." So Pilate takes Jesus into the palace again and says, "Where do you come from?" And this time Jesus is just silent. Maybe he can't speak because he's so beaten up and exhausted. And Pilate says, "Speak to me." Don't you realise I have the power to execute you? And Jesus manages to say, you only have that power that's been given to you. And Pilate still tries to set him free. So he says to the leaders, I can find no charge against this man. I've got to let him go. And they say, well, if you do, you're no friend of Caesar. And this really frightens Pilate because it sounds like he's undermining Caesar back in Rome. So he moves to the judge's seat on the stone pavement. And this is like putting on the black cap of a judge when he's delivering a capital sentence. And then he says to the crowd, here is your king. And they shout, crucify him again. And he says, what, crucify your king? We have no king but Caesar, they shout back. Finally, he hands Jesus over to be crucified. And in the Gospel of Matthew, we hear he washes his hands at that moment too, which is where we get the expression of washing our hands of something, not being responsible for it. Pilate writes a sign to go above the cross when Jesus is crucified, and he writes King of the Jews in all four local languages. And the local leaders say, can't you write he claimed to be King of the Jews because we don't want him to be our king? And Pilate replies, I've written what I have written. So Jesus is taken to be crucified. The next we hear of Pilate is that Joseph of Arimathea, a well-to-do local, comes to take Jesus' body and put him in his tomb. So Pilate gives permission for him to do that. And then we have the Easter story. So that's the story. And we have to decide as disciples, as followers of the living Christ, we have to decide whether that's true. But as Pilate said, what is truth?
Thank you very much. Chibundu, why do you think Pontius Pilate is important?
Well, first of all, very well told, George. I was like, oh, this is a nice sort of, it's like I need like a coffee or something just to, yeah, that was really nice. Why do I think Pilate is important? Well, I mean, if you believe Jesus had to be crucified to rise again and rescue all of us from our sin, then, you know, Pilate was, you know, one of the cogs in the wheel. So, yeah, he had to be in the story.
What do you think, George?
Well, I think he's inserted into the story as a kind of every man, every person, we should say. He's very much like a political leader in a quandary. He's us, in a sense. We are all, in our ways, Pontius Pilate, trying to muddle through, making the best fist of it, doing the most expedient thing, doing the wrong thing very often. And I think Pontius Pilate is both fascinating and very important.
So how do you feel about him, personally, when you read the story?
I mean, so here's where I disagree. I don't sort of see Pilate as an everyman, actually. I think he had incredible power. And there's nothing from the accounts that we read of him before this incident with Jesus that suggests that he was a particularly weak man or particularly concerned about public opinion. So there's this bit in Luke 13 where it says, Pontius Pilate has mingled the blood of the Galileans with his sacrifices. Like, in today's terms, he'd be like a human rights abuser, a dictator, a despot. And so, like, when he gets to this story where he then suddenly comes across as this man who is kind of muddling along and afraid of public opinion and just seems to be actually quite weak. It's sort of like, it doesn't seem actually quite consistent with everything that we've heard about him before. And it makes me think, like, you know, there's a story in the Old Testament where, you know, Pharaoh's heart was hardened. And like, I wonder if somebody's heart can be hardened, can somebody's heart also be weakened? Because as I said, Pilate needed to be weak in this moment for the crucifixion to go ahead, because he's the representative of Caesar in Judea. I don't want this man crucified. You want him crucified. That's your business. I'm the governor and what I do goes. And everything you see about him that's referenced beforehand, the Roman Empire was sort of very brutal, very hard. You know, why is he suddenly so respectful of, you know, the Jewish public? It just, yeah, it's interesting.
So at this point, do you think that Pilate is a villain or just a weak man, or none of the above?
I think it stretches belief to think that Pilate, who is a local Roman governor in a remote outpost of the Roman Empire, could have been bothered with the detail that I tell from the Gospel of John there in his interrogation of Jesus, he would have had at least weekly batches of people to crucify, and he wouldn't give a second thought to that sort of thing. We need to remember, really, how oppressive the Roman Empire could be in its colonial occupation. It did rule by terror, and that is, to your question, Liz, villainous. And I think that goes some way to a kind of explain the cog in the machine element to which Chibundu referred. But weak or evil, weakness is evil, and evil is actually a human weakness. These things are interchangeable to my mind. It's about, I think, moral cowardice. And you could argue that all cowardice is a moral cowardice. It's about denial and evasion and betrayal, this story. And in that sense, it's another gospel parable. It tells us what the human condition is. And if we objectify Pilate and say, he's an evil man or he's a villainous man, we're making that mistake of not taking him into our ownership ourselves and seeing those characteristics in the humans that we are. So I'd like to avoid the question, Liz, and say he represents the villainy and the evil in humanity.
What do you make of that, Chibundu?
I mean, I just feel ambivalent towards Pilate. So do I think of him as a villain? I suppose, yes, we are all capable of good, we're all capable of evil. But I do think of him as a man that abused his power. And regardless of this incident, he was sort of part of a system that was very oppressive and all of that. So, yeah, I'm kind of, like, ambivalent. Like, I don't think I can get on this train to be like, let's all be, like, sympathetic with Pilate and the Pilate in me and the Pilate in you. I'm not ready. I'm not ready for that T-shirt.
We've heard a bit there from our panel about their views on Pontius Pilate. Let's hear now from someone who made some big decisions that had a huge effect on him and those around him, who can relate to Pilate because of his own story. He's Paul Gask. He is now an evangelist for an organisation called Christian Vision for Men, but he used to be a police officer. In the 1990s, he was married with two children and went from a job as a uniformed officer to a big promotion in CID, working as a plain-clothed homicide detective. It led him down a dark path. I asked him what it was like working in the homicide team.
There was a big drinking culture, a lot of banter, and that sort of work hard, play hard attitude to life. And it for me, I sort of craved status and acceptance, if that makes sense. I think it's the kudos attached to how I perceived the role of a plainclothes officer. I thought, right, I've now arrived. I am better than anybody else. I really did think I was above the law, particularly when it came to having a few beers and then driving. That was the norm. And I think for me, that was part and parcel of being accepted. You know, let's be one of the boys. That's how I felt. You can do what you like. It took me down places that I really didn't want to go. And I opened doors in my life that I really, really didn't want to open. And again, it was all about my perception and acceptance, which included, you know, an affair. Because my attitude was, if I sort of buy in to that culture of being one of the boys in its entirety, then I'll be accepted. I wanted to be the best. I wanted to be accepted. I wanted to be the best detective in the office. So I pretty much set my stall out at the detriment of everything else, including my family. My job became my driving force. I just craved status and acceptance. I just wanted to be accepted by my peers as I perceived it. And I just thought, well, if I'm this hard drinking, hard working, this persona, which I sort of created for myself, and then I'll be all right. And I'll be good at my job and everybody will like me. That's what I thought. Everybody will like me. And I think in hindsight, there was a lot of people who didn't.
The story of Paul Gask, and we'll be hearing more from him a bit later. Doing things you know are wrong so people will like you. Is that something Pilate could be accused of doing, Chibundu?
He definitely did something that he knew was wrong, according to the account that we've all read. I'm just still not convinced that he wanted, like, the people of Judea to like him. There's just nothing he'd done in his career to suggest that he was particularly concerned. But yes, I can all, in the sense that, you know, this the pilot in me, I can identify with doing something that you know is wrong and doing it anyway.
Initially, he goes against the crowd.
Yes, he says, this man is innocent. Yes.
And then the crowd start to chant and he changes his mind.
Yes.
So what's that if not wanting to be liked by the crowd?
So this is where I come into my, I believe this is the hand of providence, because in other instances of what I would expect Pilate to do, Pilate says, I think this man is innocent. The crowd says, no, we don't, no, we don't, crucify him. And then he's like, gods, kill everybody. End of discussion.
Okay. So it's a kind of, it's another example of his power.
I just think that the fact that he decided to be swayed by the crowd, or he was swayed by the crowd, I just see the hand of providence in that moment, that a Roman governor would listen to a crowd of people that he thought were inferior to him.
And George?
I agree with Chibundu that he wanted to be feared rather than loved by the crowd. But I'd like to suggest in addition that he wants to be rather like Paul Gask and his police colleagues and masters, bosses. He would want the approbation, the approval, the admiration of his masters back in Rome, and particularly the Emperor Tiberius. And in that context, I think we need to see Pilate, well, actually, I'd like to suggest almost as a comic figure. We don't know much of the rest of his governorship of Judea and what happened. But there, in the histories written by Roman historians of Pontius Pilate in Judea, we do learn, for instance, that he hung the Roman standards of the Caesar, the Emperor Tiberius, in the palace in Jerusalem. And as a consequence, because that was a very sort of a greasing up sort of thing to do to Rome, you know, to get sort of Rome's approval. He upset the local Jewish leaders by hanging the Roman standards, and he upset Rome for upsetting the local Jewish leaders. So he messed that up. He also, rather more darkly, organised or commanded a massacre of a Samaritan uprising that we learn. And that caused his Roman governors to be very cross with him too. He was recalled in the end for that to Rome, and it's almost certain that he would have been put to death when he got back to Rome. But Pontius Pilate was very lucky in that Tiberius died while he was journeying back to Rome to face the music, as it were. So we think that Pontius Pilate got on with it. But I just wanted to sort of make the remark that his attempts to be liked by his colleagues, like Paul Gask was doing, you know, foundered precisely because he kept messing up. And that's actually quite comic in its way.
Chibundu, are there parallels or lessons that modern Christians can draw from Pilate's political decisions and the compromises that he made?
Okay, so here's where I get on the Pilate in me train, because actually I thought about it a lot before I came here. And I was like, well, to be honest, all of us, probably all of us, there is a context where we have some power and some influence. And whether it's people-pleasing or colleague-pleasing or boss-pleasing, if you think something is right, then you should go on the side of right, despite of, you know, what the people or your colleagues or whoever says. And I mean, I was thinking of like a modern-day application, and I was thinking, actually, social media is probably a place where the phrase, you know, people get crucified, quote unquote, on social media, or pilloried, or like, you know, the you know, people, you know, pile up on someone because they've done something wrong. And then I was thinking about it, I was like, well, okay, as a Christian, how would I sort of get involved? But see, the problem with your average social media pileup is that you are not privy to the finer details of it. So sometimes somebody may be pilloried and you're like, did they do what they said? Did they do the right thing? It made me think about, well, yes, how do you step in?
So there are parallels because all of us find ourselves in positions like Pilate of having to make difficult decisions.
Yes. Yes.
Let's return to Paul's story. So Paul went on a slippery slope all because he wanted to be liked and accepted. A pivotal moment for him was when he lost a colleague who took his own life. Paul spiralled into a depression which saw him becoming dependent on drink and drugs, and eventually he left his wife and two young daughters.
The way I felt manifested itself in outbursts of rage and anger. And I felt like a frightened little boy, is the truth. Because I just wanted to run away, I made the decision that I didn't want to be married anymore. So I announced to my wife that I was going to leave. Incidentally, just prior to this, my wife, my Sue, she'd become a Christian. And I thought, well, that's brilliant now, because I'm right at the bottom of the pecking order. Because now she's got some new friends, and my opinions of Christians, particularly Christian men, was less than positive. And I just thought, well, they're all weak, they're all needy, they need a crutch. I found church irrelevant. Singing songs about loving another fella was just not cutting it for me. And the church was full of flowers, pictures drawn by children, and I resented it. So I left. I'd got nowhere to go. I sofa surfed. I slept in my car. I slept in the office occasionally. And on the odd occasion, I slept in the cell block at the police station. And I just felt wretched. I was drinking heavily. I'd started to dabble in substances that you don't buy across the counter at Boots in order to induce sleep, because I couldn't. And I was just in a mess. And I thought, I've got no other way out of this. So I made the decision to take my own life.
Paul's life fell apart and he walked away from his family. He tried to avoid taking responsibility for his actions. Pilate famously washed his hands of responsibility for Jesus' crucifixion. Chimundi, what are your thoughts on personal responsibility today?
Well, my thoughts are, yes, we do have to take responsibility for our actions. But then at the same time, I think that is the heart of the gospel, that the weight and the judgment of our actions doesn't fall on us. It falls on Jesus because he went to the cross. And I mean, it's interesting. Like, I feel like I actually have been on a journey on this podcast, because we started with, is Pilate a villain? Is he a weak man? Da, 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 da. But it's like, at the end of the day, to be honest, that doesn't really matter, in the sense that, like, the crux of it is that there is no sin that cannot be forgiven. Like, that is the point. That's why Jesus came. And so, like, you know, if Pilate repented from, you know, his sins, then it's like, and he accepted Jesus, then yeah, Jesus welcomes him, Jesus forgives him. And I guess people often find that, like, they say, well, you know, how can someone have done all these terrible things and then they just say, oh, Jesus, I believe that you're the Son of God and you died for me and rose again and now everything is forgiven. It's like, no, it cannot be forgiven. No, they have to pay the price. But then actually, like, you know, it's irrelevant whether I think somebody is a villain. Like, I can say that I think something is evil and something is wrong, but the grander story of the Christian story is that there is grace for that. There's grace for Pontius Pilate, if you accept it. There's grace for Judas. There's grace for all the people that you think have committed the most heinous, most terrible things, including yourself. And there's also grace for me. So yes, I've been on a journey.
Yeah, that's wonderful. George.
Paul's story, I think, is a fascinating one, and bless him. And I admire him hugely for telling it so honestly, actually, particularly the kind of unmanliness that surrounds the idea of becoming a Christian disciple, you know. And I do think that that's reflective of the story that we're considering today in terms of Pontius Pilate's, really, and the way we've been unwrapping it. Pontius Pilate is venerated as a saint and a martyr, a Christian convert in some parts of the Eastern Orthodox Church. And in that legend, Pilate encounters the Christ, is forgiven by the grace of God, and finds the light.
Let's hear the end of Paul's story now. Having hit rock bottom, Paul had a moment of clarity where he remembered how hard his friend's suicide had been and how his own might affect his family. So he sought out his wife's vicar for help.
I knocked on his door. He invited me in and I couldn't talk for a good hour. I was so upset, sobbing uncontrollably. And eventually he said to me, "Well, what are your plans?" And I said, "I haven't got any because I didn't plan to be alive today." So he said to me, "Well, do you want to go home?" And I said to him, "How can I? I put my son and my girls through hell. I really had." But he said, "Well, I'll come with you. We'll see what happens." So I wasn't sort of strong enough to go to my own home without holding the hand of this little clergyman. Sue allowed us in, and I made the disclosure that I'd contemplated suicide. So Sue rang our GP. Our GP was a member of our church. And to cut a very long story short, I was diagnosed with suffering from severe clinical depression, and I was put on the sick from work, prescribed some medication. I'll never forget my psychiatrist saying to me, "If you want to save your marriage, you've got to tell your wife exactly what you've been up to." And I thought, I can't. But I know I had to. So I had to tell her why we were £15,000 in debt, some of the short-term affairs that I'd had. But I had to drop these bombshells on her, and praise God, she allowed me back into her life and the life of our girls.
You had to make some pretty big decisions when you were at rock bottom, and decisions that meant that you got your wife back, you got your kids back, you got healthy again. But prior to that, you also made some decisions that were quite harmful, which sent you into that downward spiral. So with the story of Pilate in mind, what do you actually think of the decision that he made to essentially crucify Jesus?
When I sort of overlap my journey with Pilate, they're very similar, because as Pilate did, for status and acceptance, he went with the flow. I know it was preordained. I get that. Otherwise, we wouldn't have the story of salvation that we have. But I think we were very similar in that respect, because I think he also knew that it was not the way to go. But to go with the flow and to keep his sort of standing as he perceived it, then he went along with that, as I did.
So do you have sympathy for him?
I think I do, because when I think about Pilate's involvement in the crucifixion, he was pretty pathetic, really, as I was. And yet, there's nothing wasted with God. God used the experiences that I went through to make me the man of God I am now. And don't get me wrong, you know, I'm not the finished article. I'm not the man I should be, but I give thanks that I'm not the man I was.
So that's Paul's story, and he sees a lot of his life in Pilate's life. What do you think about that?
I think it reflects Paul's story as he tells it, which is his obsession with fitting in and going with the flow, as he puts it, being a man's man with his colleagues in the police, denying and evading his responsibilities as a police officer for the approval of those around him and presumably his bosses. And, you know, that just chimes for me with Pilate. Pilate's trying to come out of this with as least harm to himself and what he perceives as the greatest benefit for his image and his standing in the eyes of the Emperor Tiberius in Rome and those who could affect his career. And that is the human failing that is reflected in Paul's life and career that he overcame. And in the same way as the Eastern Orthodox Church and the Coptic Church celebrate Pilate's life as a saint, as a convert to Christianity and a martyr to his faith, is that both those stories show that it can be turned round. There is nothing, as Chibundu said earlier, that can't be turned round by the grace of God.
Mm. And I suppose in the difference with Paul and with Pilate is we get the workings out with Paul, don't we?
Yeah.
You know, we hear the initial story
of
the power that was used badly, perhaps. Mm. Well, definitely, it was used badly. But then the transformation. And we don't get that with Pilate. We know very little about Pilate.
Well, yes, that's interesting, isn't it? Because it's a legend and a tradition in the Eastern Orthodox Church about Pilate. But Pilate's story kind of comes to this abrupt full stop, which leaves that big question mark open, not just about him, what happened to Pilate, which is a fascinating question, but it leaves that question open for us too. Yeah. It's an open-ended question going, so what's your story going to be?
Yeah, absolutely. Chibundu?
I think it's really brave and interesting to see someone identify with Pilate. And I think maybe like going into my own personal Bible study, maybe I might adopt some of this. Because I think actually, naturally, when I'm reading the Bible anyway, I identify with the good guys. I identify with David and with Esther and with... And even if... Obviously, all these characters and, you know, the Bible is honest about their failings, but we don't necessarily see, like, the redemption of Pilate. And I think, actually, maybe that's part of my wariness of identifying with him because I'm like, I don't know how his story ends.
Yeah.
So I think, like, sort of almost that, you know, remove the plank in your eye before you remove the speck in someone else's eye, even though, like, I think it's also a plank in Pilate's eye personally, but nobody asked me about the size of his sins. But I think, yes, sort of like going through the Bible and not quote unquote only identifying with the good guys and seeing how, if you're not careful, you could be a Pilate in whatever context you are in. And sort of, yeah, there go I, but for the grace of God. So remembering, yeah, you could be a Pilate, you could be a Judas, you could be, you have the capacity to also be a David and Elijah and, you know, and an Esther, but you could be some of the bad guys as well. So
Could I just add one thing? What I really identify with is Pontius Pilate's rhetorical question, what is truth? Hmm. When I was a journalist, the newspaper I worked for was sued for libel for a piece that I had written, and it was going to court. We went to see our lawyers at this working for this newspaper, and I went with my venerable desk editor, a very experienced journalist, and they decided, our side, our lawyers, to settle with the person that was suing us for libel. And I cried out plaintively, but it's true. My story, the story I wrote was true. And my desk editor got me by the shoulder and said, George, there's your truth, there's my truth, and there's the truth. Mm. Now, he wasn't trying to be theologically profound there, but I've always held that close because I've kind of thought, oh, we do get it. This is a movable feast. Things that are true and untrue might differ between Chibundu and me and other people, my family, my friends. Maybe we disagree on what's true and what's untrue, but there is the truth. And Pontius Pilate is unwittingly, as I unwittingly did as a journalist, stumbling on the profundity of that by going, huh, what is truth? When it's standing right in front of him.
So there is a truth that we as human beings can't reach because of our own stuff?
Our own stuff gets in the way. And I think that's the evasion and betrayal on a daily basis that we get involved in. But it can break through and see how it broke through for Paul in his life. Mm. It broke through eventually for me. And I don't think we always recognise. I don't think I always recognise it. Yeah. I know. I'm just because I'm a priest like you, Liz, and you as a priesthood of all believers, Tribundu. I don't think we've got some sort of VIP access to this truth, but it's always that truth and that witness to that truth that's work in progress, and it was work in progress for Pilate, and it just opens that question. So what's your work in progress for getting at that truth?
What about you, Chibundu?
I have never thought about Pilate as much as I've thought about him in preparing for this podcast. He's generally treated as a peripheral figure in the story. But then just as we've been talking, I think it's not about sympathy. For me, like, a new insight I've gained into this story is really how wondrous and how miraculous it was that in this tiny, far-flung province, Pilate, you know, gave the order and let Jesus be crucified. And then that gospel traveled from Judea to the next place, to the next place, and it got to Rome. And then you have a Roman emperor who is then bowing to Jesus Christ and saying, Jesus is the king above all kings. And it's so interesting because Pilate is like, oh yeah, you're a king, king of the Jews. And it's like, you know, Jesus is like, actually, I'm going to be king of the world, including your world. And like, you know, every knee shall bow and all of that. And I think, yes, it is sort of just us just sort of talking about the story and unpacking it in this way is that it is so miraculous that, yes, as you said, some backstreet preacher in Judea, and then that just gospel has traveled. And, you know, I was born in Nigeria, recognizing Jesus, and then you're here in Europe and this, that, and the other. And this message has become global. So, you know what? Thank you, Pilate. If not for you, we would not all be sitting here thousands of years later.
Yeah. It's funny you say, you know, that you've never spent this much time thinking about Pilate, because neither have I. And yet we mention him every week, at least once, in the Creed. So how interesting that he almost is this background figure of such significance. Oh. And yet we don't spend the time to really understand or get to know his part in this crucial story. Well, I must say, in all truth, I have thoroughly enjoyed our conversation today. Many thanks to my guests, Chibundu Onuzo and to George Pitcher. I'm Liz Addy-Cunley, and you've been listening to the Good Friday and Easter edition of Things Unseen, which was brought to you by CTVC. From all of us here, have a very happy Easter.
And you can hear this programme again and find other editions of Things Unseen at www.thingsunseen.co.uk.